Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturers of the finest heat-treating ovens available. Find your next oven at evenheat-kiln.com. To the chopper!
Welcome to Knife Talk. It is officially 2020. Who'd have thought, eh? Here with me, I'm Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives. We've got our regular hosts, Mareko Malmasi of Malmasi Fire Arts, and Jeff Fader of Fader Knives. How are you guys?
That's Meow-Reko this morning.
Yeah, Meow-Reko. So, yeah, we're using some new software to record, and for some reason, it's given these guys weird names. So we've got Meow-Reko and Discreet Moonwalker. I don't know what that's all about. But
yeah, me neither.
I think it's just random. I think it's random.
Let's hope so. Yeah. I'm not that clever.
So how was your new year? What you been up to?
Mine has been okay. The holidays were a little rough for the family. They were all sick, and we didn't actually get to do a lot of the holiday stuff just because, you know, we're back in Washington where we're close to family, which is great, except for there are a lot of little kids and a lot of older family members. The last thing we want to do is get everybody sick at all the holiday events.
Yeah.
So we stayed away from everybody. And it's been good, though. I had one big final push. I had a chef's knife and a utility knife pair, or kind of like small set, that I finished up on New Year's Eve and sent out just in time at the post office at like, I think the post office closes at 6 here, and we got there at like 5:45.
Nice.
But it was good to get that sent out. Yeah, right.
Just in time manufacturing.
Exactly. Exactly. But
otherwise, so did you actually do anything for New Year's Eve?
I hung with the family and stuff. But like I said, they've been sick. My wife hit the hay early because she's been trying to do her best to get as much sleep as she can. Mm. Hopefully get past all this crap. I did end up going to meet up with a buddy of mine who was one of my best men, Ryan Heckman, if you're listening. What's up, bud? We went down and we just had a couple beers, hung out, and then we cruised back to his place and hung out some more. It was just a super low key. I don't know. I'm not really into the crazy celebrations anymore. Just want to hang out with good people.
I always find, but by New Year, we sort of had enough of, you know, Christmas and so on. And you just wanted to be over. You just want to get back to normality. So we were pretty much the same. We were just staying awake when we didn't really want to be up till midnight. A quick sort of chink of the glasses, then, you know, straight to bed. It was just, let's get over and done with. But, yeah, I'm just raring to get back to it now. What about you, Jeff?
I got accosted on New Year's, and I'm going to have to talk about that in my beefs.
Accosted?
Yeah. Wow. I had a verbal altercation.
Oh, jeez.
With an old lady.
You got a thing with old ladies.
I'm telling you, it got weird. It got real weird, but I'm going to save that for the beefs. That's called a radio tease, ladies and germs. But we went out. My daughter went to a party, and my wife and I went out and didn't really watch the ball drop in our town, which was a lot of fun. And then we went home and went to bed. And then the next morning, we do a little bit more tradition. My wife has got all these crazy superstitious traditions on New Year's Day, which actually make it way more fun than any other holiday for us. You got to eat certain foods and you got to make certain foods. And it's the stuff that we don't normally eat. So it was a lot of like, you know, you got to do certain things that are, it's a lot of fun. So it's cooking all day and eating collard greens, black eyed peas, and then long noodles for a long life. And we drink champagne all day and we, you know, keep the doors closed, and it's great.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. Great. It's a lot of fun. Oh, I tell you what, we've been doing it for years. She just looks up things. Oh, there's new traditions here, and you got to eat 12 grapes, and each grape is for a month. And it's a lot of fun. We close the doors. No one's allowed in the house. We start cooking right off the bat. No, you're not supposed to eat chicken or any poultry because they scratch backwards, and that's not positive. You got to eat a lot of pork because they move forward. Trust me. She's been doing it for years, and it's made it a real fun day. So
that sounds great. I love that. Yeah,
I saw that rum cake too. Oh, dude, we had smoked salmon for breakfast, and then we had collard greens and black eyed peas for lunch, and then they made this, you know, this butter rum cake that we've been making for a while that it's been unbelievable. And It was awesome. It was a real American Italians are called, when they eat like that, they're called gavones. So we were real gavones. It was great. And then I got a lot of Italian people mad at me because I suggested putting cheese on pasta with seafood. Oh boy.
They get
mad when I even suggest it.
Cheese on all pasta. Cheese on all pasta for me, no matter what's included. God.
I tell you what, I like doing all the food stuff because my personal opinion is making food and making anything is all the same. It's like taking ingredients and technique and kind of giving it to someone. So my opinion about, you know, making food and everything. So I like doing all that. And then, but then, the, you know, then the point, then opinions come out.
And yeah, it's food like, police. Hey.
Yeah, it's great. I love it. I love the food police. I just like say something kind of snide and like, you know, very direct.
Wind them up. Oh yeah.
It's not for you. Yeah, it's not for you. Don't worry. It's not for you. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
So I see you've also started building your podcasting booth, and I've been doing the same too. It's been fun. It's been real fun.
I wasn't feeling very well a week before New Year's, and I was putting it all together yesterday, and I was feeling, I woke up this morning, I felt even worse. I think it did me in, but I'm ready for all the tiles. I put up all the plywood, ready for all the acoustic tiles. I made two door, like fake doors that I could put against the wall that'll have the acoustic tiles on, so I can use the room for, as a, you know, walkway. And I'm ready. I'm ready for the next stage. I got a little heater. Thanks to Josh Scott, told me about this very quiet oil fill heater, electric oil fill heaters. They're silent, and that's great. I was very impressed. They're inexpensive, and I was super impressed. Silent.
Cool. So I've been framing out ours. So I don't have, like, you've got the luxury of having a room that you can convert, but I don't. So I've had to take a bit of my workshop and, you know, put a frame around it and so on. So at the moment I'm sitting in it, but there's no walls. It's literally just the skeleton of a frame. So this studio, I've named it Shabby Road instead of
Abbey
Road.
That's really funny. Yeah.
So it's a case of boarding this out now and sticking some tiles in, acoustic tiles. And we should start to hear the differences. Should be good.
That's it. I'm excited.
Shall we get on with some knife news?
All right, this is part of the show where we talk about the kind of up-and-coming events and things going on around the knife world. So on our Artisans in Steel calendar, the only thing that's going on this month that I have on the calendar is in January, or this is in January. We're in January. All right. It's on the 21st to the 24th. It's SHOT Show. Oh, actually, there's a couple things. And then starting on the 24th to the 25th is the Las Vegas Custom Knife Show. I've been seeing people posting about going to the show. There's some super talented folks that are going to be there. But I also wanted to announce that the new Artisans in Steel calendar, the 2020, so this is more of a standard January to December format, and I think we're actually going to start, we're just going to keep with that, just because that's a little bit, I don't know, it's a little easier for folks, I think, in general. And also, it's easier for us timing-wise when it comes to preparing and putting the calendar together and everything. And I think it's just going to be a lot smoother. And already I'm starting to think of who else will start putting the calendars, maybe to start doing more genres. But anyways, if you go to malmossyfirearts.com, it's actually, you just scroll down just a little bit, you can click on the Artisans in Steel calendar. They're available there. They're $20 and before shipping. And then there's, the shipping's a little different based on if you're in the United States versus international. It's usually not that much of a difference, but it does make a difference. Anyhow, we got a lot of great people in there. I talked to Nick Wheeler. I have Peter Swartz-Burt. We got Jordan Lemieux. We got Tiger Lily Knight. We got Haley DeRosiers. We got Van Barnett. We got some old school players in here. We got a lot of great makers in there. A lot of beautiful photographs. We got our boy Fingal. We got Fingal Ferguson in the calendar, and we're just really excited about getting this out. And it's a little, I think ideally we would have gotten it put together and sent out on December or ready in December, but just there are a lot of delays and a lot of challenges with getting photos together, and like I said, another reason that we're glad to be, we're going to start doing this more standard format so that we can start preparing now for next year's release. So Anyways, cool. That's what we got.
And remind
the
people again where they can buy one of those.
Yeah, you can get a hold of yours at malmossyfirearts.com. I also have a link in my Instagram bio if that's easier for people, but malmossyfirearts.com. If you just scroll down the landing page right there on the homepage, it's the Artisan Steel calendars right there. Yeah.
Cool.
What else do we have in news? It looks like we got some news about the New England School of Metalwork.
It's just that I feel like as someone who, you know, as what we do and trying to be helpful, I think it's important to not only give tips, but to kind of also tell people that, yeah, learning tips are good on this, that, and the thing, but there is no better way to learn than taking a class. So my personal goal is to be much more helpful towards the New England School of Metalwork, who has a new course curriculum. Also, Center for Metal Arts have new course curriculums. They're going to have lots of different types of classes, but, it's just, I feel very strongly that no matter, you know, all the little great little things we do, nothing will compare to learning, with a teacher. So check out what they're doing. They got lots of options. I know the New England School of Metalwork has a ton of new classes, and I think it's important to kind of say, yes, YouTube's great for tips and tricks, but there's nobody I've ever met who took a class at New England School of Metalwork who said it was a mistake. So, you know, that's that.
NewEnglandSchoolOfMetal.com, and that's it, isn't it?
Right.
So I've got a bit of news. So a few people have asked, generally when I'm in the shop, I wear one of these classic sort of French chore coats, you know, the indigo blue. And I found that they're made very local to me here. A few people have asked me where can I get them and so on. So I'm going to stock them on my website too. So they'll be the traditional French chore coats. They're going to come with a little chop enamel badge. And they'll be up within the next sort of 2 weeks. So just to let you know, those are coming.
Nice.
But also something quite exciting for our listeners. So we got a new sponsor coming on board next week. I'm not going to announce who it is yet. We all like a radio tease.
Yeah, I love a radio tease.
Yeah, but they're all about helping you design and build knives. So what we're going to start next week is a build-along. So we'll tell you how you can get this design for a knife. And each week we'll do a different stage. So it'll be maybe, you know, we'll start with, you know, cutting up the profile, then maybe the heat treat and so on. So by the end of sort of 5 or 6 weeks, if you've never made a knife before, if you're a listener, or even if you are an experienced knife maker, which obviously many of you are, it may take you back to, you know, the simplicity of just building one single knife in a different way. You may learn something, or, you know, we may learn things from you guys as well, doing things slightly different. And hopefully people will share their pictures, that kind of thing. So that's coming next week. So it's going to be a knife talk build along over 6 weeks.
So how do we follow it?
Well, I think we can discuss that next week. This is very early days.
Very exciting.
But we're going to have a special offer with a sponsor, which will be able to help you along with this as well. And it's going to be exciting. It's going to be exciting.
I like a little tease.
Not.
What else
so,
is there?
Do you guys in get... a little bit of entertainment news, yeah. And this is something that's, you know, once in a while I try to find something kind of interesting. I wasn't feeling very well, and I was, you know, with the holidays and everything like that. My daughter was watching a Disney show on the computer. I was like, "Oh, what's that?" She's like, "Oh, we got a month free membership to Disney Plus. I got a month free membership to Disney Plus." And I was like, "Oh yeah, well, oh, so there's a show on called The Mandalorian, and I heard about it, I read about it, and it's basically, just to give you the synopsis, it's like the Boba Fett from Star Wars guy, and he's just kind of like, it's very like if you read comic books, it's almost like a Western. He's like this quiet, you know, heroic character who does all these things, and he's got, I'm not going to spoil any parts of it, but the only reason why I bring it up is I thought, all right, let's just watch this. So the whole point is he's got a helmet on, he's got all this armor, and he throughout the episodes, in the first few, he ends up after every, like after the missions, he takes one of the things he'll receive this special steel. It's called Beskar steel, and it looks like a block of Damascus, and he brings it down to the sewers to this armorer, and then the armorer makes this big production, and they forge out like a piece of armor for his, like, and so it's like a very video gamey, like this special, this steel is very specific to, you know, whatever, it's you know, very protective, and every episode he kind of gets something new, and then they have this, well, you're basically like a blacksmith, and I thought, oh, that's kind of interesting, and all of a sudden I was just like, wait, this is, you know, one of the things is this is written and directed by Jon Favreau, who also did Iron Man. He also, you know, in the Iron Man movie, he had a blacksmith scene there too. And I thought, oh, this is kind of interesting. And then I started to realize, like, oh my God, this is what we're going to be dealing with, knife makers, in the future. Everyone's going to ask you, oh, is that made out of Beskar steel? That's in the TV show. That's all they say is, oh, is that a, but the funny thing is I, it was, I'm not going to give any spoilers. I'm not going to tell you what I enjoyed watching it. I enjoyed watching it. It's a very reminiscent of, you know, the Star Wars characters and all that. And it's, you know, the cute, but just one thing I will say is the human actor, anybody who can see their actual face, they all got to go back to acting school. If you got a mask on, they're fantastic. Anybody with a mask on, they don't have to see what they're, you know, human. It's terrific. But the funniest part is, and this is a Jon Favreau thing, and obviously he doesn't listen to this, but it would be nice if he had a little bit. He does so many blacksmithing scenes in his movies, and they're always so wrong that it's like he had a this, so the funny part was, is the black, you know, the main character goes in and he hands this piece of, you know, Damascus, for the most part they call it Beskar steel, and he goes, oh, this is Beskar steel from a smelter and blah blah, and then the blacksmith opens up this big box, and there's it's lit, and his bullshit tongs are backlit, and you can almost see that it says, you can almost see that it says like Kane and Company Blacksmith Depot, $38 tongs, and it's just like, and then the hammer is a pair of tongs holding a fullering tool, and it's just like, it's just, you just want to say to these people in Hollywood, look, you got the best armorer in Hollywood is Tony Swatton. Go talk to him for 5 minutes and he'll give you a little bit of he'll give you some reality, because it's some nonsense.
Take a class.
Well, I mean, you know, Jon Favreau, look, there's a lot of blacksmiths who will happily, oh, you've done two big blacksmithing parts in your TV shows and movies. We're opening our doors to you. Come on in and forge. I actually watched his TV show with Roy Choi, Chef, and they're at Skywalker Ranch, and they look at this Damascus knife, and he turns to Roy Choi. Oh, that's Beskar steel. I'm begging you, please. We're opening our doors and our hearts to you. Still a little bit. It's far more interesting than what you think it should be. You guys want to add anything, or?
I haven't seen it. I tried to keep away from the Disney Channel personally, but I haven't seen it.
The other thing people are going to realize is when he gives them the steel, and then they're supposed to make this part, he sits down and the blacksmith makes the thing as he waits. Like, all of a sudden it takes 2 minutes to make whatever he wants. And that's the other thing. But then I will give you one spoiler, not really one spoiler, but I've never seen somebody whip somebody's ass with a pair of tongs, and some people get tuned up with some tongs, which is, that's pretty funny too. I don't think I've ever seen on a TV or a movie someone getting pieced up with a pair of tongs.
Nice.
Is this an ongoing thing then, like a weekly series?
Well, here's why. If you have they've already done the full series. And if you act now with your free, you get a free month, you can watch the whole series. But it's been, you know, it's fun. It's a fun little, I'm not big on fantasy stuff. I really honestly like my fantasy. I might like my science and my fiction kind of separate. But it was like, you know, it was a fun little thing. And, you know, I did like the fact that they were, you know, the whole idea was about the material. I did like that they were kind of focusing on that. But guess what, guys? All that, what's the one from the Game of Thrones, there's another, all these,
the Valyrian steel.
Yeah, this is going to be the same thing. Get ready for the all beef review next year. It's going to be like, if somebody asked me for Beskar knife steel. Yeah, I mean, even Alec did a video, he made a little build of Beskar steel. He hopped on that train pretty quick, which is God bless you, Alec. But you know, look, it was fine.
Combat Abrasives make the world's best abrasive belts for knife makers, available in any size and at unbelievable prices. Go take a look at combatabrasives.com and get 15% off with the promo code KNIFETALK15. Do it now.
Knife Talk is sponsored by Combat. I sound Russian, not like Arnie.
Yeah, I definitely like it better when you're Russian.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway.
Hey, man, can I ask you a question?
All right. This is the time of the show where we take your listener questions and you guys get to steer the ship. So if you go to Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram and you can DM us your questions, and usually we, if they're, you know, if they're well edited and we haven't done them before, or they're funny or whatever, we'll put them up. So the first one comes from Nor Garui. What advice would you give us 13 to 14 year old makers coming up behind you? I'm in a group that has 35 of us, 12 to 15 year olds, and I'm one of two girls. What mistakes should I avoid?
Wow.
You think,
so there's a whole group of them. That's amazing.
That is
incredible. That's great. No, listen, maybe that's the reason why, you know, people are watching YouTube. Younger people are watching these YouTube shows and they're, you know, younger and younger. It's great.
Yeah. I'll jump in first then. And I'd say, do your own thing. Don't, you know, be too worried about getting things wrong. Find your own way. Don't necessarily copy any other maker, or, you know, maybe to learn a new technique or something, that's fine. But just develop your own style. And I think you'll definitely stand out. And the fact that you're so young, you've got plenty of time to, you know, to make mistakes and grow from them. So just go for it and enjoy it, really.
Yeah, I'd say definitely, you know, taking a class if you possibly can, even if it's, if you're trying to, you know, bladesmith, you know, if you have a blacksmithing course, or especially a bladesmithing course available nearby, I would try to take that. But if you're trying to get into stock removal, it's actually really, I don't know, there's no real database of where to find people in your local area who are also doing what you do. Hello?
Yes.
Oh, I heard a ding. Go ahead.
No, that was me. I didn't turn my... I was bad. I was a bad boy.
Oh. Amateurs. Come on.
I was bad. Oh. I'm sorry.
Hey.
Go ahead. Keep going. Database.
But to build on... Well, yeah. No, there's no real database of where all the different makers are. And actually, that would be interesting if somehow we could get something like that put together, just so that people can all of a sudden kind of like start holding little meetups or hammer-ins or get-togethers or whatever, just to kind of talk shop and stuff like that. But to build on what Craig was saying, you know, I think, and Jeff, you can clarify on this or not, but I think one of the biggest things, especially when people are learning how to paint or how to draw, they do a lot of lessons are taught in the style of a certain artist, because there are a lot of really great foundational techniques that you can learn through those other makers. And I think, you know, anytime you're trying to learn something, if you can learn or copy somebody, like Nick Wheeler's a great example. You know, he's got a ton of informational stuff online. And you go and you follow that, you do a few or whatever, however many, but then you kind of start seeing how you want to make it your own, how you can make these little changes here and there and start developing your own style. But when it comes to developing skills, I think taking the lead of somebody else is a really great way. I mean, even myself, I started by working for Bob Kramer, and for 3 years I made Bob Kramer knives, but it really informed me on how, it taught me a lot of great technique. But it also informed me on how I wanted to do things different. And do things kind of in my own style. And that's what I did when I started making knives on my own.
I think that that's a very good point. And it is true. When you're learning under an artist or knife maker, you're going to learn the way they do things. And a lot of times you're going to be influenced by the way that they do things. And that's just the way it is. In regards to a young person, I'm going to give, you know, impossible advice, which everyone should take, which is you have to be patient and know that the next one will be better. As long as you're focusing on, all right, here are the problems. How can I, you know, fix the problems of this one and fix it for the next one? The other thing is not being frustrated to the point where you want to stop. I think that a lot of people get very down on the technique or get down on not learning quickly enough. When I had my interns, usually what I would do is if you work long enough, we would make a knife together for the intern. And then there was a lot of, feeling that then my interns would get really down because they would realize, well, this looks like shit. I should look better than it does. And I think that, it's hard to tell people patience. It's hard to say that, you know, these are things that, you know, you're not going to be able to do exactly what you, your mind wants. And you just, part of it's practice.
Yeah. I think also as a 15-year-old young girl, who's only one of two girls in a group of 35 young people trying to learn this stuff, I say, don't let anybody give you any shit, because
you're talking to a 13-year-old and telling her not to take any shit.
That's exactly what I'm fucking saying.
Right. Don't let anybody give you keep cursing, for God's sake. She's only 13.
Don't let anybody give you any crap, because that's exactly what people are going to do. And if you like, get a hold of us. We know a lot of really great female makers. If you are looking for, if you would like kind of a mentor of sorts, there are a lot of really, like, our friends Haley DeRozier or Kay Foy or Ashley Childs, or, you know, we got a lot of female makers who are friends of ours that we would be happy to set you up with. So let us know.
You would be happy to set them up. I'm not speaking for them.
Sure. I'm happy to set them up.
Yeah, all right. Well, that's very generous of you. I think it's great. I mean, ultimately, you know, look, it's you know, you're at the best stage to start at this, because, you know, the younger you get, I mean, you know, look at all the young makers now who are in their 20s who are just, you know, phenomenal. You look at like Will Stelter and Jordan Lamothe and there's just a pile of young kids, Will Freeman. You look at a pile of these younger guys. And it's just a question of starting at that younger age and kind of like cutting your teeth early. So, you know, you can kind of like, you know, really put the pedal to the metal when you get after your 20s. It's great. It's fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely.
God bless you. God bless you, Nori Gurui.
Nori Gurui.
Yeah, I'm with you. Something like 100%.
The next one is from Jarrell Edward. Hey, guys, any tips for better light? Well, he said lightening, but I think he means lighting. As his eyes are getting older and it's hard to see the fine details. He says he's got good shop lights, but any tips would be great. And thanks for the great entertainment. You know, I've just recently gone through this because I've changed over as part of my sort of thing to be as sustainable as I can and be a sort of conscientious maker. I've changed all my lights to LED here because they're 70% more power efficient and all the rest of it. But what I found makes a huge difference is the color temperature of the light that you use. Because we all know you can get, you know, some light that is more yellow or some light that's more blue. So these are all measured in a scale called the Kelvin scale. And the sweet spot is that between sort of 5,000 K and 6,500 K, because that's sort of daylight. It's natural daylight sort of color. And I find that helps massively. It's far less strain on your eyes. Particularly if, you know, if you're in the shop all day and you've got these lights blazing down, because you want it to be lit as well as possible. So if you've got those old fluorescent bulbs, you might find you get some fatigue with your eyes, and, you know, they may be, because basically they flash super, super, super fast. And over time, your eyes will sort of get accustomed to that, and it just makes them tired. But yeah, LED lights with the color around about 5,000 to 6,500 K, that will mimic daylight as much as possible. And try to get as many angles as you can so you're getting less shadows. So I've made a triangle of LED lights around my shop. And I've also got some low down as well, which are normal sort of like lamps, if you like. But all using those same temperature bulbs. So even if you're using normal incandescent bulbs or whatever bulbs you're using, try to get as natural as you can to daylight. But I think if you're thinking about changing the lighting, it is a good time to go to LED because it draws so much less power. They don't blow out like a normal filament bulb would, and they're not any more expensive. So it just makes sense to do that because your electricity bills will be, you're going to be 70% more efficient on your power of lighting too.
Wow.
So
that's
awesome. Have you ever felt like vertigo-y from being in a big store with lots of halogen or fluorescent tubes?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I used to get really bad migraines working in an office with them because, as I said, what they do, they flash super, super, super fast, and they've got different, like 50 or 60 hertz, depending on the electricity supply that you've got, which is quite often when you're sort of recording and you're using a video camera or even your phone camera, you'll see this flashing, the strobing of the light. And you get that from fluorescent light because your shutter speed isn't matched up to the strobing of the lights. But LED doesn't strobe. LED is just a constant light. And as I say, you can get that perfect sort of daylight color in. And it just makes me happier. I don't get that horrible ache in the back of my eyes when you've been in the shop for sort of 12 hours. It's just completely natural. It makes sense.
That's a good one right there. I used to get super vertigo-y going into superstores. Mm. I used to get literally like it was almost like vertigo was setting in.
Sure.
Yeah. It's not good for you, those fluorescent lights. And they're also noisy as well. Quite often, you know, they'd be buzzing and so on. And your ears just get accustomed to it, so you don't realize. But there's this huge noise in your shop. So LEDs completely silent, completely like daylight, no flickering, and they're 70% more efficient. So, you know, what's not to like about that?
There you go, Gerald Edward. Ain't going to get much better than that.
Well, I actually have a little something I'd like to add.
All right, it's about to get much better. It's about to get much better. About to get much better.
I don't know if it's going to be a better tip, but I'll add two stuff. So in my shop, the lighting that I'm working with was already there, and where I had to place my grinder is kind of, I end up standing between the light source and the surface, like the platen of the grinder. And so what I ended up doing, and so it blocks out a lot of the light. I also got a big old fat head too, and I'm wearing a cap, and that doesn't help. So what I did is I got a hold of a pen light that has a little pocket clip on it, and I clip that onto my respirator. I use the 3M, like the flat filters, and I can just clip it onto the filter. And I used to have a headlamp on the front of my respirator, but that kept getting in the way. Where this pen light, I can just clip it on. I can also take it off. But because of the angle of the filters, it shoots it straight at where you're looking. And because it's just a little clip, you can kind of make minor adjustments. The only thing, I only have one. And the only thing I would do different is get two of them. So that I wasn't, because it's casting shadows onto the left because the light source is on the right. Mm. And what would be great is if I had two lights, then I can just kind of, it would cover all of that area. But it's really great because I don't have to worry about having overhead lights positioned properly.
Right.
And that's never even really worked for me ever because I'm always just hovering, standing right over the work and blocking out the light anyways. So having these pen lights clipped onto my respirator has made a really big difference. But again, that only really works if you have a respirator or kind of like a cheaper respirator like I got. Because if you got a full face shield kind of situation like Craig's got, that doesn't work as well. You'll have to figure something else out. But yeah, that's just my little two cents I'd like to add to that.
Those are two good tips right there.
Yeah. One more thing as well, actually. So if
three chips. Here you go.
We love our lights. But if you are adding extra lights onto various machines and so on, I sort of alluded to it earlier, but make sure they are the same temperature color, because otherwise you may have a bunch of light. It may be really well lit, but it will actually cast a shadow just having two different temperature lights.
Right.
So it's light, but one area will be much lighter than the other and cast a shadow in it. You can just play with your head a little bit. So, yeah, try and match up all your bulbs so they're the same K. And most bulbs now that you buy, whether they're LED or incandescent or whatever they may be, tungsten, whatever, they'll all have the temperature written on them.
Oh, the temperature will be written on the side of the box.
Exactly, yeah.
And
yeah,
what's the what's the sweet spot on the temperature?
Daylight is between sort of 5,000 K, which is 5,000 kelvins or 6,500 kelvins, and that's pretty much daylight.
There you go. Nice. All right, that was a good light. That was a good one. I'm not saying shit.
All right, this next one is from Yazil Knives, which, by the way, I want to give a shout out to because he was one of the first people to actually buy the calendar when I posted it up the other day. Anyways, all right, it says, hey man, I've got some stainless steel heat treat questions for the podcast. When is it best to do the cryo treatment? I'm using ABL and I've heard that before tempering is optimal. There are also resources that say it can be done after the first temper cycle, but before the second. Also, do you have any tricks in your stainless steel heat treat process to make it better, i.e. foil wrapping methods, or what kind and how many combustible material or how much combustible material in to include inside the foil pouch? This is kind of more you guys.
Well,
so I'll let you take it.
My cryo, I did it a couple times and I talked to a few guys, and a lot of times I'm under the impression that you start with a temper cycle and then finish with a temper cycle. So if you do, you could do, you know, that's what I've heard. I think that I'm not 100% sure if that's what a lot of people do. I did cryo one time with AEBL, and I was like, I had a bit of liquid nitrogen, and it was such a production to get and such a production to hold. I was like, I don't need this in my life.
Sure.
I know that we covered this with Jeremy like a year ago or 6 months ago or something like that. Do you have anything you want to add to cryo, Craig? Morocco, for that matter.
Do cryo with the stainless that I use. I use Sandvik, which is commonly used over here in Europe. So the 12C27M or 14C28N. But I actually called them because I was a little bit confused, because they suggest like a deep freeze, which is different to cryo because it only needs to go down to -5. So you can do that in a home freezer. But what they suggest is, your normal sort of heat treat quench, wrapped in foil and all the rest of it, do one temper cycle, then do a deep freeze, then do a second temper cycle. So pretty much what Jeff is saying there, really. But with regards to foil wrapping methods, it's a bitch every time I cut myself, every single time. So I've got a pair of like garden shears, kind of, you know, small secateurs that I use to cut the foil. Always make sure I do a double fold to make sure that no air is getting in. And with regards to combustibles, I know some people do, some people don't, but I add just I make a few little balls of tissue and I throw them in. The idea is when it gets to a certain temperature, the paper will ignite, burn off any oxygen that's already in your pouch to make it completely inert inside. And that's pretty much it. So if anybody does have tips for wrapping foil, please let me know.
I have some tips.
I have some
tips for wrapping foil. When I first started buying foil, I bought a little bit of foil. And then I started buying rolls. Now, it's much cheaper if you buy rolls, like 50 yards a roll or whatever like that. And then I started to see there were different types of foil. And when I started reading it, I read one is good for 2200 degrees Fahrenheit. Mm. One of them is good for, 2100 degrees. There's different variations. And then however high the temperature was, it was a thicker gauge and be more expensive. So I realized, well, with my knives, with the 440C or even with some other stainless steels, I'm never going over 2000 degrees. I'm kind of like staying at around 1900. So it said, well, I thought, well, it doesn't make sense for me to get the more expensive stuff that goes up to 2200 degrees. So I'm never going to do it. So I started to get the less expensive one that just covered my temperature range. And I realized that it was much easier to cut it with a razor knife. And what I would do is I'd lay it out on a table. And then, if it comes out in a two foot roll, I would actually score it. I'd mark out every 8 inches. So that's 3 cuts. And then however, an inch on inch for the top, an inch for the bottom. Let's say I'd do 17 inches and then, I'd get 4 pieces, 8 inches, because 8 inches by 17 would be enough to get me what I needed for a chef's knife. And then what I would do is I would get a sharp razor knife and a straight edge, but don't start at the edge of the side, because what happens is it catches. You insert the knife like an eighth of an inch from the edge and then you pull. And then what that'll do is your knife is sharp, you'll cut real easy and you won't get any tears. But once the razor knife gets dull, it starts to catch, it binds up while you're pulling it, and then you have a problem. But that's been a much safer way for me to cut stainless foil with a razor knife. And so you put your straight edge down, you insert the knife like a 16th or an eighth of an inch from the edge, and then pull. And then the last thing is you cut that last 16th off, and usually you get pretty safe, easy cuts. And then I did what Craig was saying, which is I double wrap everything. And I also actually flatten the creases with a rubber mallet, just to kind of make sure. And I don't throw anything. I started throwing paper in and I didn't really see the need. So yeah. I just try to chuck it in.
Rather than use a mallet, I've got a pair of pliers, and they've got like really like heavy ridges on them, on the grips of the teeth. So I use that to sort of crimp around the edge.
Sure.
And where you've got those ridges, it makes that extra sort of seal, you know? So it makes it nice and flat, but you've got these little sort of ripples. I'm hoping that'll just help seal.
Well,
seems to work well.
You know what? It's not really a pro tip. It's what I do is I have, if you go to an art supply store, some people like to stretch their own canvases, and there's actually a pliers that instead of it being what, half an inch, you know, pliers are like, you know, a regular pliers like half an inch or so, it's almost like it's almost 2.5 inches. And what it's for is if you're grabbing the canvas and then there's a lever. So when you're stapling the canvas to the frame, you can get a good bite. So it's actually a why. I'll post a picture. I'll post a picture on Instagram. But they're actually amazing because it's like it's over 2 inches, so it's perfect for that for grabbing one of the edges. It was it's something I just thought about. I was like, oh, this would probably be convenient, and it's I love it. I love it. I don't have to do one at a time, and it's you get a much more. You get like 2 inches of bite per.
Nice.
Good tip.
Yeah. Just to add one more thing to the heat treatment end of things. I would suggest that you go over to Knife Steel Nerd's blog, which is written by Laren Thomas, who is a certified metallurgist, and his dad is the legendary Devin Thomas. And he does a lot of heat treating stuff kind of based around knife making, especially chef's knives, but he does all kinds of different knives and tests for different toughness and edge retention and stuff like that, as well as discussing different merits of, you know, different approaches like Yazzle's talking about right here, whether the temper immediately after the quench or to do cryo immediately after the quench. So yeah, go check out Knife Steel Nerds. They're on Instagram as well, but there's a lot of great information in Laren's articles.
Shout out to him.
You know what, we're 2 questions in and I've learned so much already. This is a good one.
All right, we'll see. You're about to learn nothing right now. This one came from somebody who I lost the name. I apologize. If you stabilized a potato, could you make a knife handle with it?
No, it's the simple answer.
I think you'd have to dry it out a bit, right?
You'd have to
moisture.
I mean, that's the whole point of stabilize. It's not just, you know, I don't think you can stabilize anything. You know, there are biological parts that hot
the problem
to hold up
you'd
to.
Have. Is, you know, first of all, you'd have to dry it out as much as possible. A potato would obviously shrink and wither and so on. But let's say you didn't dry it out and you put it in your stabilizing system with the vacuum, you'd get so much friction as it's drawing out the liquid that it would actually boil your stabilizing solution and spoil it all. So, no, I think it'd be pretty much impossible.
Well, didn't learn anything there except for don't try to... And P.S., no one's going to buy your fucking potato knife. That's number two. You'll never sell a potato. Hey, who wants to buy this Santuco with a fucking russet potato handle? Nobody.
Dupree Knives, the next one, says, hey, Matt, can I ask you a question? Do you think there should be standards in place to protect customers from getting a knife that isn't made to a minimum quality? With a lot of new people getting into the craft, how can anyone be sure that if they buy a knife, it's even been hardened properly? Especially if the majority of new makers are learning from YouTube, and he says myself included too. So it's a good question actually, but yeah, how do we make sure there's a minimum standard? I don't suppose we can, but what do you guys think?
I mean, that's the purpose of the American Bladesmith Society, is to kind of establish a basis of standard of quality and technique and guidelines to follow. And so if somebody's concerned about a knife not being to proper specs and, you know, or heat treated properly or all any of that kind of stuff, if they want to get a knife from an American Bladesmith Society, Journeyman Smith or Master Smith, they're welcome to it. That way they know that those people have met a certain level of standard and quality and skill and technique and knowledge and all that, and they don't have to worry about that. I think it's on the maker to educate and show their customer base that the stuff that they're making is of quality, and that means doing some live testing with it, chopping into stuff, doing edge retention stuff, like, you know, depending on what your knife is used for, you know, show that it can be used for that purpose. And if anybody's got a question, you can just direct them to those videos.
I tend to think that I agree with what you're saying about the American Bladesmith Society. I tend to think that there isn't a governing body, nor should there be. I think it's far more important to stand behind what you do. You do what you say, you say what you do, and then you stand by what you do. If you someone has a that's how you deal with standards. What you're doing is you're providing someone with some assurances, and if the assurances aren't met, you're standing behind them. You're standing behind your work, and you're giving people not only value with what they're doing, but the value of, you got a problem, I'll take it back. And then ultimately what happens is that's good PR for you and for other knife makers.
Absolutely.
When you hear someone say, hey, listen, I was wondering if you could do a tune-up, but oh, I don't do that. There's a lot of things. Listen, I've heard it all. And there's a lot of people who are very brusque with their customers. And I think that that's ultimately not really the way you should be going. I wouldn't like an email from some governing body telling me that they don't like how I'm doing my fucking choil. You know,
sure.
I think the most important thing is, and it's not about knife making, it's about being a human being, is there has to be a degree of complicity and some wherewithal. And if something doesn't work out right, you're going to take care of it. And that's how it works out right.
Yeah. Yeah. And don't get me wrong. I'm definitely not saying that there should be a governing body. I'm just saying that the ABS is kind of like, if you want to try to point somebody in that direction, or if somebody needs that, that's kind of what the ABS is. But I 100% agree with you. I remember when I first started out and people were telling me how they do things, other makers, it really surprised me how some of the makers said that they take people's money after the knife is built, and these are great makers, but after that they don't feel any responsibility to that thing. Which completely blew me away, because they're like, after that, I'm done with it. I don't do anything to fix it or to keep it up. And I was like, what the hell? Well, like, I feel like I would have too much of a sense of responsibility to the thing that I built, that, you know, like you're saying, if something goes wrong with it or if it needs a tune up, which, you know, happens, then you take care of it. You know?
That's the most critical issue. And I think that a lot of knife makers have this sense of they're better than other people, or they're whatever. And there's the sense of like not having to, I don't need, customer service isn't part of what I'm doing as a bladesmith. Customer service is out. If, you know, there's a lot, I talk to a lot of guys who are very, without being crazy, they don't respect their customer. They don't respect the fact that their customers are people who want something with value. And when I say value, I'm not saying a good price. I'm saying they feel like they didn't get ripped off. And I find that customer service is something that's very lacking in the mentality of a lot of people in this business. But mm-hmm. without getting screwed, obviously not getting screwed, and you should get paid what you want. But I mean,
right.
You're talking about being honorable. You're talking about being honorable as you do what you say. You know, if you fuck something up, don't start nickel and diming somebody because you made the mistake. You know, right. I think that, you know, or you take on, I used to remember being in a metal shop, and then the guy would take a derailing job on, and then he would realize that he underbid the job. And then he'd bitch and moan to the customer about how he underbid the job. Well, that's your fault. You know, you're supposed to you do what you say. You eat it. If you fucked up, you eat it. You don't call him up and say, you know, I need more, whatever, you know. I think it's your honor as a person in the world, not just the knife maker.
Yeah. Yeah. And what you'll find as well, that a lot of people who maybe buy knives from us, they'll be buying knives from a bunch of other makers too. And people talk, but you know, so if you're given a shitty piece of work, people will soon know that you're given a shitty piece of work.
I've heard from people about other people. And I was, and I said this on another podcast, all I could think of is like, I wouldn't want someone talking about me that way. I'd prefer to, say, all right, listen, it didn't work out and he took care of it. You know, I had a difficult customer a long time ago who got a gift certificate, and it was like, this person was so difficult for this. And in my mind, I'm thinking they got a fucking free knife from somebody and they are being so difficult. And I just said, I'm going to take care of this knife. And he sent it back a couple of times because he wanted me to put it in, you know, want to engrave something on it and all this, that, and the other thing. And it was a difficult situation, but I, you know, at the end of the day, you know, he and I didn't really get along very well, but he can't say that I was a piece of shit. I did what I had to say. I going to do. I made him happy. Was there friction? Yes, there was a lot of friction. But at the same time, I feel comfortable with the job that I did.
Yeah. And he did too. We've all got these stories, haven't we, of customers where maybe our personalities haven't aligned, or to something's not, maybe communication hasn't been quite right. But yeah, like you say, it's up to you to have a clear conscience walking away from it at the end.
I got a funny story of this guy. And it's only because I would send these progress reports and I was saying, yeah, here's how I hand stamp in my, this is a couple years ago when I was stamping in my touch mark. And I explained, showed pictures and stuff like that. And his response is, well, what about my touch mark? Just like that. What about my touch mark? I was like, you made this fucking thing? Like, where the hell are you? What are you talking about? It was hilarious. I mean, that's how you can get a taste of what that was like. So it was like, what about my touch mark? You know, I was like, yeah, what are you talking about? You touch mark. Help me. You didn't even sweep the floors. Get your ass up here.
All right.
Let's move on to another one.
Yeah, this next one is some romantic advice, I believe. Is from KLB. I almost said
this is a different KLB.
Yeah, different KLB 44333. So he is asking first date ideas for a maker. What are some first date ideas?
A make as in two makers, I assume.
Ah, no, no, they're not two makers. You know, two makers aren't dating. What two makers are dating? Come on, man. That's crazy. That's a mistake, by the way. I used to date an artist. Huge mistake. Giant mistake. We were
a dick.
She ha 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 ha. That's very funny. She actually and I were in a critique together, and when we busted up, we were doing a critique, and she lit me. I was putting one of my sculptures up, and she started talking about me as a person. It got so ugly. It said the ugliest critique of all time. And then they looked at me for a response, and I said, you know what they say? Opinions are like assholes. Everyone's got one, and they all think theirs smells great. It was a very ugly situation. I would suggest not dating another maker.
Another maker. Let's think. What could be? I think something like a pottery class or something could be cool, you know? Scene from Ghost where
the Ghost
are making this pot. And we've got the Righteous Brothers in the background.
Righteous Brothers, yeah. There we go. My dad used to get me when I was younger, when I was in high school, he used to say, the best thing you can show a young lady is that you have some culture and see what they say. And he used to say, take her to the museum and look at something and then ask them questions in regards to what do you see when you see this. I'm like, all right, dad, no problem. Like, my dad was a painter, so he's like, yeah, you know, you can really, you don't take him to a movie, you can take him to a museum and then ask him what they think. So I'm so stupid at the time too, that I was at an all-boys school and I was just, you know, running through all, you know, get dating a pile of girls from the all-girls school, and it turns out that I was taking all of them to the same fucking show. So I got to the point where the last one was like, did Fader take you to the fucking, you know, the MoMA for this? I'm like, yeah, did he ask you this question? You sure did. So it was
oh my God.
Yeah. Well, I was, you know, I was a freshman junior in high school. So that's what I think. Go to a museum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, maybe food, cook together. That sure. Could be good. Get to know somebody that way. That could be good.
Well, and there's so many like maker spaces now where you can just go take one class or something like that. Like if you're a maker and you think this your date might be into that kind of stuff, go do something together and kind of introduce them to your maker world in a way. Otherwise, just go see a movie.
You know what's fun? I don't know if you have it in New York, they have it. It's called, I think it's called Yakiniku or Shabu Shabu. And basically it's you cook the food or like even you go to the Korean barbecue places where they bring all the food and you got a little hockey. Oh, you and I went there when we went to see, we weren't on a date, but it could have been when we went with,
we were on a date.
We
don't
were at the, JB Pray with big old, with Tim Musig and Tony. We went to,
We went to a
Korean barbecue place and they give you a big puck in the middle and you cook your own food. It was a lot of fun. It's very, It's a fun experience. Those are fun. I would take a girl on a date like that, except for the fact you got to burn your clothes afterwards because you smell like a barbecue joint.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. It smells good.
Let's move on to another one. I think this is Drothstein. Drothstein 3614. Gee, that sounds like an old MSN handle. Remember that, like back in the 90s? A bit of these weird. No.
All right, just but P.S.
Big boy 69 again.
I called him Dr. Rothstein. But he says, David. I'm like, well, you put the DR, so it's D. Rothstein. I think it's David Rothstein, 3614. Gotcha. I'm with you, Dr. Rothstein, from now on.
Big boy 69, we call
him. Right.
Hey, guys, can I ask you a question? I'm a new knife maker, starting with stock removal. I'm about to heat treat and temper my first blades. I've got a good forge, and I'm using 80 CRV2. Any tips on getting the heat treat correct without issues? I plan on using a magnet, but I've also read that's not as accurate gauge of the proper temperature to quench. So he's looking for help. He doesn't want to fuck up his blade. Love the podcast. Thank you.
Oh my God. It's tricky. Like, depending on, especially if you're going to do it out of a forge, light, the incandescent light coming off of your knife is hard to read accurately with the human eye, because if there's any excess light, or even if there's a huge lack of light, it's going to tell you different things. If you're in a dark room, you're going to think the knife is blazing hot, versus in a lit room or outside, it's going to look like it's black when it's blazing hot. I don't know. If you can do anything, try to heat treat with somebody who knows what they're doing. Heat treat out of a forge. Otherwise, I would, or if you have a temperature control forge, or just send it to like Peter's Heat Treat, like a heat treating service. I know you really want to do it yourself, but it's really easy to screw things up and get things too hot.
Couple things, and that was a perfect response. That the how dark your shop is going to give you different readings in your eyes. Unfortunately, a lot of people say, "Well, I only have this, and how can I do that?" And I know I'm supposed to use the kiln, but I can't do that. If you want, you can't have it both ways. You either have to use exactly, if the steel company says this is how you heat treat this steel, and you got to use an oven. That's a good point. Sending off the stuff. But the other thing is, without saying anything, is an even heat oven is not expensive, and you can get a lot of value. I still have the first even heat I ever got. And I love it. And I have the LB18. I love that. You're killing the doubt. And if you say to yourself, I can't afford a even heat. If you sell a couple knives and just put the money in a fucking bucket, you can buy an oven for not too much. And I think that if you're planning on doing this a lot, no one's ever said it was a mistake to buy an even heat. I've never met one person say, I wish I never bought this thing, unless they decided they don't want to do it anymore.
Sure.
Now, with that said, there is one little trick to get you closer, which would be to get a high temperature laser thermometer. That's what a lot of sword guys do. I know I saw Kyle Royer doing that when he was doing a sword, when he was quenching a sword. He was pulling it out and actually testing the temperature with the laser thermometer. But you got to get a really, really high temperature one. That might get you closer than visually. But my opinion is always, I hate doing that. I hate you. I actually have one. And the only thing I use it for is to check the temperature of my oil. I don't use it to check the temperature of the steel. I don't forge. I do forge, quench a couple little things once in a while, but I usually always use my even heat oven. And then if I do use the electric, when I do use the thermometer, I use it when I was when I was getting a temperature for some forge welding, I was using that. And then I was using it for my oil to see what the temperature of my oil was.
Sure.
But unfortunately, you can't have it both ways.
Going on to what Jeff said then about an even heat. I mean, we say even heat because we use even heats, but any, electric kiln, I suppose. I wish when I'd started that I had this, really shitty sort of 30 by 1-inch grinder, on those little $100 things that, I know Harbor Freight sell them in the US. I think everybody starts out on one of these things. I wish that I'd then got an even heat before I moved up to my 2x72, because that made a bigger difference to my knives than actually having a bigger grinder.
Sure.
Making sure the heat treat was right. So, yeah, I mean, I don't do any forging. It's all stock removal for me, but definitely at the good heat treat, that's key. That's what's going to make or break a knife.
And literally. Now you can do stainless steel. You can have better results holding your stainless steel, your 440 sear, whatever you're using. You're holding it at temperatures that are different. It's going to be much easier than if you were to kind of go back and forth in a forge. And you know that whole thing, and I know you know this, Marego, is when you're going back and forth in the forge, you got to be real careful because that tip is going to get hotter than everything else beforehand. You know, before everything else. And how do you evenly heat the whole temperature? When I pull my knives out of the oven, there's not one side is hotter than the other. You're not going to have different. You're not going to have differences in your oven.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think the only other thing I can suggest to him, if he can't do the heat treating service, he can't get into an even heat kiln right now, and he has to do it out of the forge. You can just go for it, or if you have some extra material around, make some sample pieces, and do a few sample heat treat, just to try to like and play with different color temperatures. To find the right, I guess, kind of the right temperature for you. But what I do when I heat treat out of a forge, if I'm just doing like a blacksmith forge or a blacksmith knife or something like that, I almost always just heat treat it straight out of the forge. I never really kind of just let the knife sit in the forge. Especially if it's a full tang or a blacksmith tang that's been like drawn out and pulled around, I'll start by holding onto the tip of the blade and heat up the handle area, and then I'll turn the knife around, and then there's already heat in the tang and the heel of the knife, which is where there's a greater thermal mass or there's more material, which is going to take longer to heat up. So that way, when I turn it around, when I start heating up the blade, I'm heating it up. There's already some heat in it, and I'm not, and the tip will come up kind of more to temperature, along with the rest of the blade. I also open up the bricks on the backside of my forge. I can open up the front and the back of my forge, and if I just do a little opening on the back, just that little opening helps make a difference and gives me a place to kind of bob the tip of the knife into to help keep heat off of it while I'm heating up the rest of the blade. But I'm constantly moving that knife, so I'm dipping it into the forge and then back out of the forge and in and out until, and I'm watching the color come up, and you'll see this kind of, as you're coming up through dull red, you'll see the shadow appear and then disappear, and then that starts to tell me that you're getting into the right area. And when that shadow is completely gone, throughout the whole blade, or at least the cutting edge of the blade, that's when I know I'm there, and now I'm just going to spend the next couple heats just bobbing it in and out, just making sure it's even, and then I have my oil right there, right underneath the forge, so I can pull it right out of the forge and straight into the oil. So there's no walking, you know, even 5 steps over to the oil will make a huge difference in the heat loss of that knife. So, but again, I would do my best to try to work with somebody who knows what they're doing. I mean, most people, if they have a little extra time and you show that you know, you've been doing some stuff on your own, we'll let you come hang out maybe in their shop and let you just see how they're heat, or if you have a very specific question like this, see how they do that. But otherwise, there's not much else you can do other than take a class.
There you go. This episode should be called Tip City.
It's comprehensive.
I mean, oh my God, there's little room for dick jokes. It's all good shit right now. That was awesome, Marek. That was awesome. Wow.
Let's do one more question. I'm gonna pull rank a bit here and choose one because I want to know the answer to it myself. James T. Green, 1989, has asked, is there any danger of tempering a blade too long? And is there an advantage to tempering in multiple short cycles as opposed to one long cycle? I've been thinking of this myself a lot, and I've never really looked up the answer or looked into it in any way. Tempering a blade too long, is that possible?
I don't think it is, but I do think it is important. It's better to do shorter. I assume when he says shorter cycles, at least an hour, if not a couple hours, versus doing like one long 4 to 6 hour soak or something like that. But when you temper, so say you heat treat your ADCRV2 knife, you harden it, you put it into the kiln to the oven to temper at whatever, 400 degrees. As it's tempering, it's converting the retained austenite is also flipping over to, or something. I can't remember exactly. This is where, you know, I do a good job answering questions. Now I totally take a shit. Anyways, bad stuff.
You mean the austenite converting to martensite?
Well, yeah, it's so stuff that didn't convert in the heat treat,
right?
In the hardening, is now converting in the tempering. And if you only temper once, you have the potential. And there's always going to be some level of retained austenite, but the goal is to reduce as much of it as you possibly can. And so if you only temper once, you're leaving some of that untempered, transformed martensite in the blade, in the finished blade. So you always want to at least temper a second time. And realistically, like, some of the best knife makers do at least two, but sometimes even three short cycles of an hour or 2 hours of tempering. I think if you're tempering in an oven, you want to, I like to do at least 2 hours, because it takes a bit of time just to get up to temperature and to kind of even out and get an even temperature throughout the whole the kiln and the knife before it starts really doing what it's supposed to be doing, you know? And so, yeah.
And the key is, you've said this before, is if you do your first temper at 400 degrees and you need to do a couple more, don't go past that temperature on the next one. Yeah, so if you're underneath the 400, you could do it 15 times, actually straighten the blade. I tempered it once at 400, and then I started playing around 375 with the bars and clamps and stuff like that. And I wasn't going past the 400 degrees, so I wasn't going to soften the knife up. I was still, you know, still coming out straw yellow. And you can, you know, you can do. I've tempered, and then you can, even when you're straightening, you could do it for 45 minutes, and then pull it out with the clamps. And as it cools down, it's going to straighten out too.
So what I normally do is at the end of the day, I normally do my tempering at the end of the day. So as you know, my shop is part of my house, so I can just put them in. I can just walk away, go make dinner, whatever I need to do. I always wonder, let's say it's a 2 hour cycle, I'll hear the little bleeps going, that's the 2 hours, so I'll just run back into the shop, press stop, and just leave the knife in there and it'll cool down with the oven. And I'm always wondering whether that's a good thing or a bad thing to do, or whether it makes no difference. I assume it makes no difference, because it's just cooling, you know, almost like when you're doing like a normalizing cycle, you know, it's just cooling down slowly.
Yeah, I think it's fine.
I'm assuming it makes no difference, but I just want to make sure I'm not doing any damage.
No, you're not.
Okay, that's cool. That's cool.
All right. So we hit a couple more?
So shall we move on? Because we've got a couple of beefs, haven't we? And we've got bits and pieces.
Yes.
Shall we? I'll do the sponsor read if you like.
Sure.
So a shout out to our sponsor. So we all use Rhino Wet for our hand sanding. It's the best paper out there, best sandpaper out there to do sanding with. It's durable, lasts forever, cuts really well, and it's made by Indasa USA. So they're Indasa USA on Instagram and Twitter and everywhere else. A lot of people don't know the name Indasa, but they're the makers of the amazing Rhino Wet. So go take a look. They've got a bunch of other products that they sell as well, but we can get you a discount. So if you go to Texas Farrier Supply, they do a bunch of other stuff, not just Rhino Wet. They do, I know Jeff gets his dyes there as well, but they do lots of supplies for knife makers. Head there, texasfarriersupply.com, and if you use the promo code KNIFETALK10, you're going to get 10% off your whole order. So whether that's Rhino Wet or whether that's other bits and pieces that you want, you'll be able to get it all at Texas Farrier Supply with 10% off with KNIFETALK10.
So thanks to everybody.
We got beef.
Sorry, I should have even known. I should have known. Thank you for everybody for listening to All Beef Review. We had such a fun time listening to that. I had a fun time listening to it. I had a fun time doing it. We had a lot of laughs. I realized that there was some listener runoff. So I thought I would read. We had a couple extra all beef review listener. I call it a listener runoff. And I thought we could read.
It's cattle runoff. Ugh, not good stuff.
All right. Well, I mean, I don't know what else to call it. I mean, it's like a little, you know, we had a little bit of extra beef from last week, a little leftover beef that we're serving
dangly
up to you.
Bits.
That, well, fine.
This is the slurry.
All right,
slurry
all right, all right. So let's read off the first. Why don't you kick it off, Mareko, with the all beef review listener runoff.
Okay, this first one is from Rustic Projects. He says, "Hi guys, I have a bit of a beef with the saying, knife makers don't make mistakes, only smaller knives. If your blade breaks, you screwed up and need to start over. Beef out." I would
hear that a lot. I think I've used it myself too.
Sure. I would somewhat agree. I think it depends on what the inside of the knife looks like after you break it. Because if you got giant grain structure in there, that's probably why you broke it and you need to reheat treat it. But other times, I think you just torqued it too hard. I've definitely torqued a few blades too hard and just snapped them. But the grain structure looks awesome in the steel. So I just got it's laying around waiting to become a shorter knife. But I think what he's saying, right, is that just admit you made a fucking mistake.
Well, that's fine. I mean, that's fine.
Own your mistakes.
That's fine. It's fine. I like the idea of not of trying to, you know, you break a knife and you turn it into a whatever, a K-tip or something like that, and someone can actually use it. I mean, I don't see a problem with that, you know.
Waste not, want not.
Bung.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Mize_J has said, "I do have a beef with Forged in Fire, advertising a $14.99 knife you could buy at Walmart." I think most people are pissed off with that.
I don't know why they did that.
Yeah.
It's.
I mean, ultimately... Yeah, I mean, oh, sorry.
We've talked about this in the past, that they've got this platform there where they could really be, you know, helping the community, right, and, you know, educating people, but they don't seem to be interested in that at all.
It's weird because a lot of cooking shows, when they highlight the contestants, they highlight their whole names plus where the restaurant they're from. And it's like, I don't understand why they don't choose to do that. Maybe it's because it's knife. Maybe it's because they don't trust who these people are. That could be it. It could be completely because some of these guys are like, you know, doomsday preppers or like part of the, like the, you know, the white Aryan resistance or something like that. Maybe that's the only reason why I can think that that's why they wouldn't say anything, you know, because then all of a sudden you're promoting.
It's a missed opportunity, I think. But it's
well,
very
let's
strange.
Be clear. I mean, they're at the bottom of the barrel of trying to find people to contestants. I mean, this isn't your average run-of-the-mill hobby. You know, I think that you get to the point where they're calling people who can weld. You know, I a friend of mine is just like, "Yeah, I'm a fucking plumber. I don't know why I got called to be on Fortune Fire. I don't even know. All I know how to do is copper pipe." You know, so
sweat and pipe,
baby. Look, God bless you, but you know, you got to figure something out. All right, next one comes from CB Custom Knives. "Here's my beef at the end of the day when I have to stop at the store to pick something up on my way home and people stare at me, stare at my dirty ass face and hands. I get it, I'm dirty." No, look, what can you say? I mean, you know.
Dirty hands, dirty money.
No, dirty hands, clean money. You got it wrong. It's dirty hands, clean money. That's the expression.
Intentionally,
oh,
Jeffrey.
All right, there you go. That old gag. That's why that old...
That, do you know... Talking about getting things wrong, can you remember we did the high fives and hand jobs reference?
Well,
you're going to
need to set that one up because you just went off the high wire.
Well, there's a bit of a story.
You
got
to set people up because all of a sudden you're talking about hand jobs.
Jeff had this phrase, which was, what was it?
It was not all. It's not all high fives and lightning bolts.
Lightning bolt.
Well, it's just because
I changed that slightly.
It's just because people think it's Thor over here all the time, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But I changed that in an episode previously to high fives and hand jobs. Got a couple of laughs and the rest of it. But now my little girls, they've started watching this program called The Helpsters. And there's this song that they sing, and it's all high fives and handshake. No,
get
they say
here.
High fives and something. So I'm walking around the house singing, "It's all high fives and hand jobs" to this like school kid cartoon show called The Helpsters, and I just can't get out of my head. Every time it comes on, I forget what the real words are. I can't remember them now, what the real words are. It's all high fives and something.
Well,
but yeah, all high fives and hand jobs.
You're
going
to sing
now.
That. You're going to sing it to the kids one day, and it's going to get.
Yeah. Oh, we do now. And I'm like, oh, shit. What's the real words? My wife is laughing. She's trying to think of the real words. And yeah.
All right.
Once they get a bit older, that's going to be tricky.
Well, it certainly is. Go. That's a sticky situation.
Back to the beef. Right. Back to the beef. He's saying, yeah, people staring at him with his dirty face and hands. He gets it.
That's the reason why at the post office that old bat got mad at me because I looked like I wasn't wearing a 3-piece suit. I looked terrible. But she definitely gave me a dirty look. It is one of those things in this world, maybe in this country, that people look down on people who do, you know, manual labor or not just manual labor, any kind of labor with your hands. Like you're it's almost like this degree of untrustworthiness. If somebody's dirty somewhere, I used to love being dirty. Well, in college, when I was an art major, I used to go to lunch, or I go to the cafeteria, I was covered in soot and dust and dirt. And at the time it was very like, I mean, it gave me a little bit more status because the sculptors were kind of like, you know, a little bit on the scarier side, but, and you know, the girls liked the sculptors. So, but it didn't work out when I got older. Now they just think I'm a piece of shit.
Yeah.
It is a real weird work. Cause I think traditionally maybe the lower paid jobs were hard working, getting your hands dirty. But, you know, that was a long time ago, Things have moved on.
Well, but still people look down at people who work with their hands.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean, there's that whole, you know, and it's really, it comes down to, it's these ignorant people who actually, the funny thing is the funniest part is if you look at the people who look at people with dirty hands, they're the ones coming to you buying your knives because they're amazed. Like I call them soft-handed people. The soft-handed people are the ones who are going to buy your knives, and they're just like, I can't believe you're doing what you're doing. But if you saw me in a gas station buying some beef jerky, you're going to put your hands and make sure your wallet's in your pocket. So there you go.
Yeah.
One more beef. Do you want to do the last one, Marekka?
Yeah, this one's from Holger WDK. I guess my beef would be people who don't follow safety procedure in a workplace in order to get work done faster, and employers who turn a blind eye because they know they won't get in trouble when the shit hits the fan because they already told you and it's not their responsibility if you don't follow procedure.
Yeah.
I'm in two minds with that one, really, because, you know, I take guards off things because I know I'll be able to work quicker and the rest of it. And I know I shouldn't, but, you know, you get to know your own abilities, don't you? You know what's safe for you and what isn't safe for you. But, you know, I can see why big companies would need to have certain procedures in place.
When you're up against a tight deadline, things go by the wayside. And a lot of that is, you know, you forget to put, like yesterday, I forgot to put my respirator on when I was cutting all the wood for the podcast booth, and my wife said to me, she's like, why are you coughing so much? You didn't put a respirator yesterday, did you? And I'm like, you're fucking right. I didn't have a whole lot of time to put it together. And you throw things by the wayside, and a lot, especially in a metal shop. I've been on jobs where they were so fast track. We were like, I mean, they weren't, the boss was not coming up to a guy wearing glasses and say, put your glasses on. He was like, we got to fucking hustle. So I understand this feeling, and it's a lot of it has to do, a lot of it has to do with the fact that if you're in a union, there's a lot more things in place to protect you from those kind of safety issues. All of a sudden your deadlines don't count. You know, all of a sudden there are things in your union that'll protect you from these kind of things happening. You know, that's why unions are, you know, the way they are. They're great because they look out for the worker.
Yeah. Hmm. What do you think, Marekka?
I mean, yeah, I mean, I definitely cut corners. I think somebody gave me some shit actually the other day. I was cutting some stuff, breaking some stuff down with my angle grinder, and I don't have the guard on it. And, but when it comes to an employer and a blind eye and all that stuff, you know, I don't know. What are you going to do? I mean, the rules are in place. They can only, or the rules can only be enforced, or I guess, I don't know. You can only hover over somebody so much. Obviously, like they go through, and people even do like safety training courses. They have all kinds of stuff posted around the job site or in the workshop and stuff like that. And that's to cover their liabilities. But I do think that an employer who is turning a blind eye or is not kind of on your ass about making sure you're wearing proper safety equipment and stuff like that, that might be a signal that maybe you need to get a new job if that's something you can do. If not, then I don't know. You got to figure out how to be able to get that stuff on you to protect you, but so that it also doesn't get in the way of the work, so the boss isn't getting pissed at you for taking 2 seconds to put on your respirator or your safety goggles, you know?
I got a funny thing that if you go back in time when Mareko and I first started coming in here, I had an intern and an employee named Carl Childs, and he was great. Best employee I ever had. Awesome kid. Just great kid. And I wouldn't let him do certain things because all I could think of is I don't want to take this kid to the hospital. And I don't want to call his parents saying that we had the insurance that if something had happened, we would have been able to take care of it. I just felt like I don't want this to be this kid's experience of something bad happening. So I wouldn't let him do a lot of things. Like, he used the grinder and stuff like that. But I mean, there was a lot of things he wasn't using. And I remember like being on him, if he, the glasses, the respirator, the ear protection, and he was on, no problem, but he would come to my shop so underdressed. He was very big with like Japanese fashion. Like, I don't understand it. Like, he loved Japanese clothes. So like he wore these, not like a samurai clothes, like current Japanese fashion. So it was like all this tissue paper pants and tissue paper shirts. And he was always underdressed when it was cold out. And I used to scream and holler at him. I'm like, you're not dressed. I'm like an old lady. You're not dressed warm enough. You're not dressed warm enough. And he never listened. That was the one thing. He's just like, I'll wear your glasses. I'll wear your ear protection, but I'm not going to listen to you about my clothes. I always got so fucking mad. I was like, God damn you, Carl Childs, and your Japanese fashion. Go fuck yourself. I love that kid. He actually stopped by last during Christmas. Good kid. But he didn't listen. He didn't listen about the clothes.
Community Showcase.
Okay. Sorry, Jeff.
Community Showcase.
Right. Hey, this is this is where we give a little love to some people out in the world doing some good stuff. It's people who we think you should be following, give them highlight somebody in the community who is doing something we like. Craig, who you got?
I've got Will Ferriby. I'm not sure whether we've talked about him before in the past. I don't think so. But it's Ferriby Knives. So he's based in Sheffield in the UK, which are, you know, Sheffield's famous for its steel and for its cutlery in the past and so on. He makes chef knives, but they're extremely decorative. So really contrasting Damascus, really contrasting handle materials. Just really, really nice work. And he takes great photos of his work as well. So go take a look. It's Ferriby Knives, Ferraby. Knives is the company. Sorry. He's Will Ferriby on Instagram. So it's Will Ferriby, Ferraby. Really, really beautiful knives. I say highly decorative. Even if it's just an example of taking great photos of knives, it's perfect. So go take a look.
We got Mareko.
Nice. I have, I have Eliane Blanc. She is a full-time violin maker and restorer who also dabbles in bladesmithing and knife making. She also has these really beautiful, like, fluffy Siamese cats that she's always taking pictures of on her Instagram. But anyways, her violin work is phenomenal, and that translates really nicely into her knife making. Lately, she's been doing a lot of chef's knives, and she posted one most recently that is just... It's simple, but it's so clean. The elegance of it is it's incredible. I would love to have this knife. But Eliane Blanc, you should go check her out. She's got 503 followers. She definitely could use some love. But she's super talented, and again, she just kind of does it on the side. But she does some really incredible stuff.
Ooh, very cool.
Nice.
Well, I got a message from the undisputed champ, Mike Dippel. Mike Dippel. My bad, Mike. And he was suggesting that we give the showcase to a young man. His Instagram is Ellard Blacksmithing. And I don't know if we've done spoke about him before, but Ellard Blacksmithing.
We have?
Well, I'm going to do it again.
Yeah.
Well, Mike DePell, this is Mike DePell said. Mike Dipple said to do it. What are we going to do? He's a 19-year-old kid from Tasmania, Australia.
Well, he deserves it.
He does these amazing hammers. He's a 19-year-old kid. He makes these beautiful knives, beautiful hammers. He just did a Damascus hammer. They're beautiful. And Mike Dipple, you're not paying attention. You're not a loyal listener.
You're not paying attention, Mike. Come on.
And I'm not paying attention. But you're not paying attention. So that's your job is to, if you want to suggest someone to me, and you want to suggest someone to me, you got to be a loyal listener, Mike. You made me look bad.
Well, Ellard, he really deserves an extra shout out. So when we were talking about the fly press and using it to make Damascus, this is the kid that we were talking about that was using the fly press to make the Damascus. He still is rocking that fly press. It's really incredible watching him forge Damascus underneath that fly press. He works really efficiently. And if you turn the volume up, you can hear he's working his ass off to make that stuff.
He's amazing. He's totally amazing. But Mike DePell, I might have to strip you from the undisputed champ. That was some bullshit. You made me look bad. You made me look bad, Mike. No, I love Mike. Mike's a good dude. All right. There you go.
Okay. Shall we do a beef?
Sure thing. Do you want to introduce him?
Where's the beef?
Beefs. So last week we did our all listener review of beefs. And we did have a beef as well at the end. But I think it's time to come back to our normal show. So let's start with our beefs. Jeff.
Well, in the last episode, I got accosted by two old ladies at the post office. And this year I was sitting in my friend's bar with my wife. It was about 9 o'clock. Wasn't that late. We were having a drink and having a little something to eat and having not really drinking that much. All of a sudden, this older woman opens the door. She comes right up to me and she says, "You're sitting in my seat." And I'm like thinking this is a joke. And I'm like, "Excuse me?" And she goes and she puts her hand on my forearm and she says, "Don't you know that you're sitting in my seat?" And she's got two friends behind her smiling as in like, "Watch what she does now." And I'm like, "I'm sorry, madam. I'm sorry, madam. I didn't. No one called ahead. How would I possibly know?" And she goes, "You're being fresh. I want my seat." And all of a sudden, her friends come over and they're putting their hands on me and they're smiling with this mouthful of dentures and really just like, and this being very unpleasant. And I'm already starting to get like, my wife can tell that I'm starting to get angry because it's like, you're being funsy, but it's not that fine. And I said, "All right, well, you know," I said, "if you take your hands off me, I'll give you my seat." And she said, "We're going to sit over there. And when you're done, you grab me because I want that. You call me over because I want that seat. Okay?" And I said, "Okay." And then she said to me, "Now repeat back to me who you're going to call." I'm not kidding.
Ghost,
I'm not going to call. I'm not kidding. She said, "Tell me who you're going to call when you leave." And I turned to her and I said, "I'm about to call the police." And then she said, "You're being fresh." And then my wife was like humiliated. I'm like, "Madam, I'll give you the seat. We're going to pay and we're going to leave right now." So my wife says, "Let's just pay and get out of here." The woman was trying to be funny, but it started escalating in this really bad way. And then my wife said, "You are a real dick to that woman." I'm like, I'm in a bad position here. I mean, she's trying to be funsy with me, this older woman with a cane. It just got so obnoxious. So my wife goes to the bathroom. The woman comes back to me to apologize to me, and I apologize to her. And I said, "I'm sorry. I didn't mean to get so fresh with you." And she goes, "No, I like it that you were fresh. I'm leaving anyway." She points to the bartender, who is African American, and she says, "He couldn't possibly know how to make an Irish coffee anyway. Let's go." My wife comes back, and I said, "I just want you to know I apologize to that old bitch." And she goes, "Well, what did she say?" And I told her, I'm like, "That old woman was this awful racist to assume that because the guy was black, he can't make Irish coffee. And I apologize. And she was garbage. And now you're not allowed to be mad at me anymore." So then then we left and it was a really, and she's like, "What's up with you and older women?" I'm like, "I don't know, man. I can't handle it." So that's my beef. It was an altercation. The woman put her hands on me. I said,
That's three old women in 2 weeks.
There might have been more. There might have been some there might have register. Been, some of them didn't make the cut to talk about. Like there's like a there's like
these the top three.
This
then.
Is the top three garbage old women. This is the top three. So I've had other altercations with older women, and these three made the cut. This one on New Year's Eve, that's number one. She called me fresh. She said, "You're being fresh." The old bitch. this is going to be my thing from now on, mean old ladies.
Where's the beef? Have you got a beef, Morocco?
I guess if I had beef about anything, it's about me being such a damn mess whenever I'm building stuff. I think I mentioned it before. You know, when I'm building a knife, I just kind of leave a horrible mess behind in my wake wherever I walk and go. And these last couple knives, building, getting ready for the end of the year and the holidays and everything, I did not. Usually I take the time to kind of try to tidy up at the end of a build after it's all mailed out and everything. And now I have about three or four knives worth of cleaning up to do right now. So that's like the last 2 months of mess making. So I guess my beef is being a messy pig.
I feel you. I'm sitting here in my shop at the moment, and I've got this frame up around me, and I'm just looking out, just the mess. I need a day or two of just decluttering everything.
I was expecting to spend a day doing all cleanup before New Year's Eve, and it didn't happen. So my shop is it's clean, but it ain't nothing to write home about.
Yeah. New Year, new shop.
What about you, Craig?
That's a show.
You don't have a beef?
That's a show. Oh, geez, I don't. No. I've been quite happy. I've kept myself to myself over this sort of new year.
You don't want to be been out much. You don't want to be shitty about anything?
No, yeah. I'm all good. All good. All good. Positive way to end.
Damn
the show.
Right.
That's the show. Thank you very much for listening. Remember, next week we'll be starting a build along with a new sponsor. And it's going to be fun. Remember, we've got the forum up knifetalk.net. There's also a directory of where you can find equipment and bits and pieces that you're going to need. And just from today's show, Morocco said we don't have any sort of database of makers. So maybe you can find a local maker, that kind of thing. That may be something that I'll put together over the next week or so. Just, you know, no promises, but maybe I'll put something together up on knifetalk.net, and we can have, you know, sort of a map showing, well, first of all, where our listeners are, and, you know, maybe, you know, you'll find a local maker that you didn't know existed, and maybe you could, you know, you could be, maybe even share tools, share techniques. It could be a handy resource, so I'll look into that as well.
Sure. Nice.
We shall speak to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye. See ya.